الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهد الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلله فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له ونشهد أن سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمدا عبده ورسوله صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه وبارك وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا أما بعد فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى وجاهدوا في الله حق جهاده هو اجتباكم وما جعل عليكم في الدين من حرج ملة أبيكم إبراهيم هو سماكم المسلمين صدق الله العظيم. A person from the Bani Israel had committed 99 murders. After such a heinous crime, he was definitely grieved, worried, concerned that is there any hope for me? So many people I have left homeless, so many people I have widowed, I've orphaned, and I've devastated people's lives, their future, their plans, everything I've devastated. Now after such a heinous crime, is there any hope for me? Hence, in this fear, this concern, that is there any hope, is there any future for me? He went up to a person who he felt that was religiously learned, educated. Perhaps there is some hope. So this person tells him, no hope. You dispatch to Jahannam. So he kills him. He says, now I made a century. Then he pursues, he goes on further. By I've committed this crime here. I know it's generally a very serious crime. But after everything is said and done, I want to know, is there any hope for me? So that person that he consulted with told him, yes, there is hope for you, provided you move on to the Qaryatu Salihin, the village of the pious. You will be remaining here, you'll be tempted to sin again, and you won't be able to come out from the abyss of wrong. So move away, go into the town of the righteous, the surrounding will have an effect on you, and it'll be easier for you to come online. But in order for you to get forgiven, you have to make this effort. So he thought to himself, no matter what it costs, I need to get my Jannah. However we analyze and see life, at the end, after our analyzing, our researching, our end, we expect to get into Jannah. And that is one end. The other end is we want to get into Jannah with ease. We don't want problems. From the time that we're leaving this world, right until we are at our abode, final abode, Jannah, we don't want any problem. We want a problem-free ride. That's what all of us are searching for. We don't want it to be problem. On the other end of the world, where there is no one to come to our side, no friend, no acquaintance, no influence, no wealth, no currency works. So when we're there all alone, then is there anything, any support base, anything that can help us? So, by Allah Ta'ala, for everything there is a solution. لِكُلِّ دَاءٍ دَوَاءٌ. There is a solution for every problem, no matter what and how intense the problem is, but there is a solution. When there is a solution, then we need to then apply the solution. The hadith says it very clearly, لِكُلِّ دَاءٍ دَوَاءٌ. For every problem, there is a solution. But now the question is that, are we applying ourselves to get to that solution? Where the Quran speaks about that person dying with iman, and at the time at the approach of death, the malaika are congratulating him and they are complimenting him. So we can also die like that. It's not that this was reserved to a certain class of people, and then after that Allah Ta'ala's doors are all closed up. Na'uzubillah, we cannot have that type of impression and that type of an understanding of Allah Ta'ala. His doors of mercy, his doors of compassion, love are always open. But is there any taker? Month of Ramadan is near and we want to score, we want to gain, and we want some type of security for ourselves. Every person is concerned that I have to cross the path, and when I cross the path, then is there any security base for me? Imam Muhammad rahmatullahi alayhi is one of the very leading students of Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi. Three students were very outstanding. One is Imam Abu Yusuf, who became the Qazi al-Qazat, the head of the highest court of that time. The head of the highest court. So you can imagine what a position he must have had when it was a time of justice. It was a time that people had the fear of Allah Ta'ala. There was no underhand work. See this person right and see that person right. There was no such a thing at that time. Everything was above board. And you can say easily 80-90% of the people were righteous. They were on par. Right? At that time, now to be the highest of the head of court, the highest level of the court, but to be the highest at that time, can you imagine now what a position he is? But he himself was so particular about his personal taqwa, Yusuf Rahmatullah. So he's approaching his death. Death has approached. And his concern, now look at what his concern is. He said, my concern is, I know that in all my life of being a judge, in the judicial practice, the whole life, is I saying this at the last moment, he's about to pass away, I know I have got no discrepancies, no weak areas. Just one I'm concerned about. I made istighfar abundantly, but that always hurts me. It's just one area that I'm not very clear. Everything, my track record is absolutely clear. There's no underhand work. I didn't go and stab anyone in the back. I didn't try and pull punctures. I didn't look for favoritism. I wasn't partial. I was absolutely honest. I was absolutely just. No matter how intricate the case against me or for me, but I was absolutely just. But yes, there was one case that I'm still concerned. I made a lot of istighfar, but I'm still remorseful as to why I committed that crime. The crime was this, that there was a Christian that came in and he lodged a complaint against Harun al-Rashid, the king of the time, that Harun al-Rashid had wrongfully usurped his land. So, and in Islamic court, everybody is given an equal audience. You can present your case, and your opponent also has the right to present his case. So, in the course of the case, my heart was desirous that I show Harun al-Rashid some additional respect. Being the king of the time, I should show some respect. Though I didn't show him the respect, but my heart was desirous of showing some type of respect and recognition. Right. And though I ruled in favor of the Christian against the king of the time, but the fear that I got is why did my heart wish that I should give some type of an additional recognition to Harun al-Rashid. So that is hurting me so much. See, we like the position or the obligation that is attached. Do we like that as well? See what a tough thing it is. He's taken on the obligation, but he is so conscious that I am going to stand before Allah Ta'ala. Every case of mine is going to be seen by Allah Ta'ala. First, Allah Ta'ala is going to see it. Am I prepared for that? Many times I speak to men, youngsters getting married, under 45. So they complain, you know, their wives are not giving them the type of comfort in their bedroom. Ya Allah, Allah's curse will be on them. These hadith, la'anatul malaika, when the husband wants some comfort and attention, and the wife is refusing, so the whole night she stays under the curse of Allah Ta'ala, malaika. So I said, alright, this hadith is clear, it's empathetic, and there's no ambiguity in the hadith, and it's a sahih hadith as well. But now look at the other side as well. When we're talking of justice, look not just selectively. There mustn't be impartiality. Be totally, there must be no impartiality, must be absolutely fair. So you look at it from this side that she refused, right? Comfort that you were looking forward to. But if you look at the Quranic ayah, the Quran says, وَيْلُ لِلْمُطَفِّفِينَ, destruction, ruin upon the people that are guilty of fraud. When the Quran Sharif used the word fraud, woe and destruction for them, so what does it refer to? الَّذِينَ إِذَا اكْتَالُوا عَلَى النَّاسِ يَسْتَوْفُونَ, when you have to demand your right from people, then you take the full pound, the full amount you take. I need to take my money from him, I will take it full, in the due date I must take it. I won't allow him any delay, and I won't give him any discount. I need to get the 1,000, I must get the 1,000 complete in the due time. But وَإِذَا كَالُوهُمْ أَوْ وَزَنُوهُمْ يُخْسِرُونَ, but justice is not one-sided. Can't be partial. Both-sided. You have to be impartial. Fair to this one, fair to that one. But when you have to pay others, are you also impartial at that time? Or you say, no, well, we'll see, my niyat is there to pay him, go for umrah, I'll buy this car, and I'll stress the creditor, whatever, you know, it's, my niyat is there, Allah will look at me favorably. Do we have that attitude, or we pay him like how we demand our right? So similarly, when it's a wife and a husband relationship, so you want your pound, you want all your rights, but then do you fulfill her rights? Or you extort her, oh, I want this career, I want this type of a dish, and I'm giving so much of mehman, so many guests, you must take care of all of them, and I want you to do this, you must behave like this. So many demands you make, and then one small thing she refused, and she was not in the state, perhaps she was not feeling well. Perhaps she had a worry, she had some type of trouble, mental problem she had. And she didn't respond like you wanted her to respond. But did you ask yourself, are you also guilty of fraud? You took your full right, but when it was a time to execute her right, then you said, no, well, we'll see about it, my niyat is there, I will see one day, I will sort her out also for whatever she is due, I will do that. So are you guilty of that? And look at the warning of the Quran. The Quran is saying, وَيْلٌ لِلْمُطَفِّفِينَ, destruction on those that are guilty of fraud. It's not a one-sided thing. So, when we study the Quran Sharif or the Hadith, and we're looking, where are our rights? What can we get out of the Quran Sharif? What the Quran Sharif has got for me? Not what are my obligations, what are my duties? So, then we are looking at it selectively. Just what we want to see, we're seeing, and the rest of it, we're not looking at it. So, that whole picture is not before us. So, this person is in the Bani Israel, and he has committed the problem, and he understands, he accepts that I have committed a problem. And I have committed a problem, that in Islam, there is no such a thing like, I commit a wrong, and you are responsible for my wrong. Individual responsibility. That's Christianity. Christianity stands that anybody commits the wrong and Christ atones for all your wrong. He takes on all the wrong. The whole nation he takes it. Committed murder, you raped, you robbed, you killed, you plundered, cheated, whatever you've done. Don't worry, why? You just come and give the tithe and Christ will take the entire responsibility for all the wrong that you have committed. So this type of a law doesn't exist anywhere. Not in this world and not in the hereafter. That you committed the wrong, you will be responsible. He committed the wrong, he's responsible. I can't take on your responsibilities. I can't take your burdens. You can't take my burden. That's a very ajeeb type of a law. I commit all the wrong and you must bear the responsibility, the burden of my wrong. So this type of corruption is very clear. But just that our minds don't accept it.
Now, you see, 3 is 3 and 1 is 1. But to say 1 is 3 and 3 is 1, there's corruption. If you say 3 is 1 and 1 is 3, then if I am owing you 3 million, if I pay you 1 million, you say that 3 is 1, 1 is 3. So therefore, take 1, you got your 3. Are you prepared to accept that? So no, I'll take you to court. The most staunch Christian, Orthodox Christian will take you. But when it comes to faith, then it's blind. No, 3 is 1. Now, can you see how you become blinded? Your reasoning ability just fails, it collapses. And this aspect of faith and deen, Allah has made it very clear in the Quran. No ambiguity. See, when Allah speaks about Isa alayhi salam, and the whole confusion about him, God, and all this, whatever it was, right? Because of the miraculous birth, they say that he's God, right? That's what they say. But then look at this verse of the Quran Sharif, Kana Ya'akulani Ta'am. Just one verse, approximately three words. Kana Ya'akulani Ta'am. Three words. And the whole conspiracy of Trinity, Allah has smashed down, demolished for the rest of time in just three words. What Allah says? Isa and his brother. Kana Ya'akulani Ta'am. Isa and his brother, both of them wished to eat. Now, that's an answer. You may say, all right, how does it become an answer? Kana Ya'akulani Ta'am, how does that become an answer? So when they were in need of food to sustain themselves, that means they were in need of all the systems of the world. For you to enjoy one morsel of food, then you need all the systems of the world to serve you. You need the sun. We need the cloud, we need the rain, we need the ocean for the moisture to be ascending into the sky, turning into rain, etc. Right? You need the wind. Then you need people, laborers. So many forces of the world you require for that one morsel of food. Right? So many. You need weather, right? Weather conditions. You need the heat of the sun. You need so much of oxygen, whatever else. Right? So many things you require. Then you need the farmer to till the soil, and then to dig the furrows, then to sow the seed, then to see that it grows well, then to water the plants, right? And then to see that it comes to maturity. When it comes to maturity, then it's going to harvest. Harvesting, then it needs to separate the chaff from the grain, right? Then it goes to the factory, milling and crushing the whole thing, right? And then turn into atta and flour. And then the wholesaler will take that. When the wholesaler takes that, he supplies it to the retailer. And the retailer, then your wife or you will go and purchase that. Then you have to make it into a roti. And after it's made into a roti, then it's served to you. Then too, you have to break that thing and put it into your mouth. Then too, it's not over. You have to then chew that thing. And then too, it doesn't end there. Then your system has to then digest that thing completely. And turn it into energy, turn it into waste, turn it to blood. But can you see how many things of nature you require for that one morsel of food to go through? And you are dependent on that one morsel of food. Don't eat it, you'll die. So now look, verse of the Quran, Kana, Ya'akulani Ta'am, both of them used to eat food. So when you say that He's God, He's Allah, what you refer to? You refer to that being who's got absolutely no need, who is self-sufficient, he doesn't have any needs. He sees to every person's need, and he himself has no need. Now, Isa alayhi salam, or be it his mother, respected, right? Both of them have been loaded with needs. Not just one person, but they needed the combined services of hundreds of people to enjoy one morsel of food. So, could he be God? Can he be God? God must be that one who sees to the need of every person, every creation. And He is free of all need. Now, yeah, the God needs so many people for Him to be sustained. How could He be God? He's got needs Himself, and how is He going to fulfill your needs? So in one verse, Allah Ta'ala has smashed this whole conspiracy, the whole thing has been smashed down. But the belief is absolutely clear. Like, some people go into this evolution theory, and they are somehow or the other, they want to prove this thing. Youngsters, educated, non-educated, but hear the theory, and then it appeals to the mind, and then they want to prove that it somehow. So, you can link it up to Adam al-Islam. But I say, there's no linkage at all. You can't link it. You say, no, alright, this man adapted to this and adapted to that and that. Therefore, there is an evolution theory. What you are saying, that this thing carried on. There's no God. So at which point can you say that because of this, therefore there is no God? Is there a point in this whole evolution theory, quite a conspiracy, right, that you can say, alright, because of this, this was like this, and he adapted to this system, and thereafter he further readapted, and therefore because of all this, therefore there is no God. Can you say that? So the theory stands out, but you can't link it up, because of all this, therefore there is no God. So there is a missing link. But then all the educated people of the time, they are talking about it. And therefore you find approximately 500 doctors in one country, they have rejected this theory. They say it's a concocted thing. Right? Found some old fossil, put some chemical, etc., made it look like prehistoric. They found the rogue in the feet, the thief in the person. But now the Darwin theory became so such a thing, such a hit, went to the depths of your heart, you can't even flush it out. You can't even flush the thing out. So when I read up this thing, I think, what went into the hearts of these people to create this type of a theory? What, something was been the catalyst, you know, that they went into this thing. So I read and I read. Eventually, then I got a closure to the subject. I found out, you see, in the Roman Revolution, the time of their empire, Roman Empire, right? So the Roman Empire had a problem with the church. Because what happened was that they were saying something, they were passing some laws. So the subject says, no, it's not right, because the church says it's not right. It's not like how government says something, Mullah says it's not permissible. He's saying something, it's not permissible. Wine, he's saying not permissible. Right? Zina, not permissible. Right? So the state understood now that the church is the impediment. Whatever we want to do now, this thing, this person is coming and putting this banners in the works. So we can't carry on. Our administration needs to carry on. And everything we think is not permissible. Not jive. So then we can't enjoy a smooth administration. So when they realized that they cannot enjoy a smooth administration, what they said, now let's separate the church from the state. State is a different independent entity. And the church is an independent entity. You will not cross swords. You are separate from us. You do your thing, we will do our thing. You don't interfere with us, we will not interfere with you. So they separated it. Why? Because they didn't want any type of interruption in the administration. That was the Roman Empire, right? Now coming down from the age, now there is a thing like, you want one order, one world order. For that one world order to continue and to carry on successfully, what they need is they must order and then the whole world must accept. That's what it means, one world order. They must order, they must instruct, and the whole world must thereafter accept this thing. That's what it means, any other meaning. One, we have got one system, whether you're South Africa, whether you're Australia, America, whichever part of the globe you are, but it's just one order that's going to continue. So now when they wanted to pass this thing here, they found that the biggest impediment in this part is the impediment of the belief of God. As long as you've got God in the equation, then you have a blockage. You say, alright, do this, this is one way order. But then the belief, the concept of God is blocking it. God says it's not right. Whether you're a Christian, whether you're a Jew, whether you're a Muslim, but when you got this one world order, this thing is becoming an impediment. Murder the person. No, can't. Why God will hold me responsible? Why have I committed this murder? So now you murder, it's one world order. It's our order that must prevail. That's what they are saying. That our order must prevail. So you can't have an interruption in our order. So, because they don't want any interruption, so they deleted the whole concept of God. There's no God, evolution. There's no God. So when the consciousness of God is deleted from the mind, I ask you, is there any consciousness left? Then it is just that one world order that you will believe you will subscribe to and you will respect. Then the concept of God is totally deleted from the mind. So this was a conspiracy, a political conspiracy, just to gain the type of hegemony and the control, supreme control. We must have that supreme control. There mustn't be any religion or any system mustn't come and interrupt our policy. This is our policy. Nothing must come. Then I studied this thing further, alright. What were the types of people that had subscribed to this? So most, about 80-90% of the people that had subscribed to this were those that unfortunately were afraid, or they were suffering from a complex. They felt inferior to education or something. They felt themselves inferior. So they spoke about it. They found, oh no, no, we know something, or this we don't know. So they felt that they are great. But little did they realize they held on to this thing here. Why? Because they were suffering from a complex, inferior feeling. So now to make them feel superior, we hold you to this. We are the dadas. So anyway, by the way, what we are talking about today, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, what we are talking about, this person committed that 100 murders. Now he went to another one, Mulana or someone. I think this person is a genuine person, let me go to him. Because Islam says that there is hope no matter what wrong you have done. But as long as you recognize your wrong, you admit your wrong, you confess before Allah Ta'ala the truth. Don't, no hanky-panky, no ambiguity, absolutely honest with Allah Ta'ala. You have done it, then you acknowledge your wrong. Between you and Allah Ta'ala, there is nothing ambiguous. There is no dishonesty. You are confessing 100%. Whether it's for you or against you, you are speaking out. You are not concerned. My wrong, I must accept my wrong. I can't thereafter justify the wrong that I am doing. I can't. Because it's a being that I am talking to. He knows يَعْلَمُ مَا فِي الصُّدُورِ. He knows everything that is secret and open. Everything is identical to him. Nothing is secret. There is no secret by him. Everything is absolutely clear to him. So your belief in Allah Ta'ala that he knows everything requires that you be absolutely honest. No dishonesty. Not 1% of dishonesty. So now this person is concerned and this concern is pushing you. You need to go and sort yourself out. You need to sort yourself out. Go and correct yourself. There is no dishonesty in the system of Allah Ta'ala. You have committed the wrong. Be truthful. Be honest. Coming, approaching to the month of Ramadan. And the right thing is, be honest. You see, take a stock of the entire year, or the past, whatever, where have I slipped on? Ear, ribat, tongue, eyes, ears. Where have I slipped on? Oh, I need to take a proper record and correct myself. I robbed someone, I cheated someone, I was, I abused someone, whether it was mentally, whether it was emotionally, whether it was physically, but I abused the person. There's a 1% possibility that I abused you, I was wrong. 99% seems to be in my favor, but 1% seems to be in his favor. I need to go and get this sorted out. Even though I got 99% over him, but there's a 1% possibility that he's right. I'm looking at it from one perspective, I feel I'm right. But I look from another perspective, I feel that I was wrong. So let me go and clear all these things, because I am going to be working with Allah Ta'ala. And Allah Ta'ala will be looking at me favorably if I got my books right. And if there's any ambiguity, there's something wrong, then how do you expect Allah Ta'ala to accept me? Because you're trying to say that Allah Ta'ala doesn't know those things that are discreet and hidden. It's a major wrong. It's a major wrong, as though you're trying to say that Allah Ta'ala doesn't know those things that are hidden. So no, I want my things to be absolutely clear, absolute. So he goes to that other Mawlana. And he says, this is wrong, I have committed. Alright, you can't be staying here. You have to move on to the pious town. Town of the pious. Surrounding is good, it will influence your life. As long as I'm going to get my maaf, Allah Pak is going to forgive me, I'm prepared to take this step. I want, as I reach Allah Ta'ala, and I'm breathing my last, and Allah Ta'ala must look at me favorably at that time. So all the stages thereafter is all gone positively, all correct. But if I'm wrong there, then the stages thereafter, I'll be problems. All around. And on that side of the world, there's nobody with me. I'm all alone, isolated. Don't you see a person going in his grave all alone? He's coming to the world, he's all alone. is going to his grave all alone. So that is teaching us that we have to face this all alone before Allah Ta'ala. كُلُّمْ آتِي يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ فَرْدًا. Coming before Allah Ta'ala all alone. Nobody to support you. No influence, no wealth, no contact, nothing to help you. Not your education, not your understanding. Absolutely, you have to stand before Allah Ta'ala and face it. So now, listen, I need to get my act right. I must do it, no matter what it costs. He's moving. En route, now he can see that he's on the throes of death. The agony of death has overcome him. So now, whatever it is, by I must struggle. I must do and exhaust my efforts. Thereafter, it is Allah Ta'ala to crown my efforts with success. But Allah Ta'ala wants to see that have I exhausted my efforts, have I exerted myself. I must not do my best. Thereafter, Allah Ta'ala will look at me favorably, but I must do myself. So now he can see now he is dying. So he is exerting himself. He is crawling. Exerts, dragging himself. No strength, dragging himself. And as he is dragging himself, the Malakul Maut comes, takes his life. Are we doing what we are supposed to be doing? You know, around 1960 somewhere, Maulana Ahmad Sadiq Method, some of us may have seen him, he used to be the Imam of Reservoir Hills. He was in the Jamiat as well. So, early 60s, maybe it was 59 or 60. So he had an urge to become a Hafiz. He was high time to come up, a young boy, about 10 years of age, and he said, no, I must become a Hafiz. So, he thought to himself, now I am living in Gilad, and Gilad is no masjid, there is no madrasa, nothing here, and how do I become a Hafiz? So he says, the only thing I can think of is the nearest town is Pine Town, and there was one simple miyaji, pious, simple miyaji, and perhaps I can take his assistance, he will guide me. So he spoke to his parents, you know what, I need to become a Hafiz. Parents told him the same thing, but how are you going to do it? And I'll do it, I'll look for a lift, I'll stand on the road to Pine Town and I'll make it happen. Well, if that's what you want, you try it all. So he went, see that determination. Are you doing what's within your means? What's within your means, you do it. Exert your efforts. Exhaust whatever you can do. Allah Ta'ala will look at you favorably. You don't have to do too much of ibadah, but all your obligations, people's rights, Allah Ta'ala's duties, obligations, see that you have completed all that. I mean, you know, make so much of Umrah and Hajj and all that, whatever else. But then people's right here, stamping this person's right here, exhausting, trying to play around with this right, making a story here, stamping on this person's right. Don't you know? Allah, يَزُنُّ أُولَٰئِكَ أَنَّهُمْ مَبْعُوثُونَ. Don't you think, don't you understand, that you have to stand before Allah Ta'ala, whatever backdoor businesses you were doing, try to rob this person, try to push him down. Although it seemed right, it seemed whatever you're doing, it seemed right. You pulled a job, you know about it. You made it look work. You made it like it worked out. But you know deep within, I'm guilty of something. Some backdoor business I've done. I've spoken to this person here, I tried to manipulate this one here, I twisted this person's arm, I made it work, it looks permissible. But I know I made a job to make it look permissible. But Allah Ta'ala knows. أَلَا يَزُنُّ أُولَٰئِكَ أَنَّهُمْ مَبْعُوثُونَ. Don't you realize that we'll have to stand before Allah Ta'ala and give a full record. Rob the person for 1 cent, or you cheated him for 1 million, you'll have to pay for it. The hadith is important. That you rob the person, you cheated him for just one danik. One danik is about 5 rands, right? 4 or 5 rands. We'll have to give away 700 of your maqbool faras namazes. One is your faras namaz, then your accepted faras namaz. For just a lousy 5 rand, your 500 namaz is going shifted. And from your account, we want to him. Why? Just that lousy 5 rand you wanted on your side. You wanted this, made a plan, and you got it on your side, right? Now, see on the day of Qiyamah, are you standing before Allah Ta'ala? Now you have to give it, pay. And there that currency doesn't work, your wealth doesn't work, gold doesn't work. What works, the sawab works. So Murad understood now, I need to get this right, I must become Hafiz. I said, I must exert my effort, afterwards it is Allah Ta'ala's It is his choice. His grace will take me through. So he went onto the road, olden time of 59-60. Just as he stepped onto the road, a baker's van came in, saw a youngster now, got a topi, Musliman. So he stopped. Salam. So the driver was a Muslim, made salam to him. So the driver told him, you know, that he explained to him, you know, I want to become hafiz and go to Miyaji and find him. So the driver tells him, you know what, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, from today, from Monday today, my company has scheduled this run for me. This run has been scheduled for me from today. So he had that intention, Allah Ta'ala made it work. See that? He exerted his effort, whatever was within, youngster, but his niyat was right, he wanted that to happen, Allah Ta'ala made it work for him. Now, I think he ran and ran and ran for a couple of good years, 3-4 years, whatever it was. One day that baker's man, that Muslim driver, when he stopped to give him one of the truck, so he's crying. He's crying badly. I'm so upset today, you know, because my company has scheduled a different path for me. Now, this pint town run is finished, I have to take another path. Now, you know, you become your office, I want you to have the blessings. You know, that I supported that child to become a hafiz. In the 60s, there was nobody hafiz. I know, in Durban, already Anantara Kifa, Tarawih, there was no Tarawih. Anantara Tarawih, right? So now that baker's man also is so sincere. So Mullah tells him, Mullah is young, about 12, 13 years of age. So he says, why? There's no reason for you to grieve. There's no, absolutely no reason for you to grieve. Because today is my completion, my khatam to you. See that? Allah Ta'ala made this happen just for the Mullah Masajid. Young boy, he made that intention. I want to become hafiz, and Allah Ta'ala opened the road for him. And to the, it was so precise. Exactly that amount of time he needed to complete, they scheduled the run, and when he was completed, they diverted. But who is the karne wali kon? Allah Ta'ala kisa. But are we exerting? As I say, what are our duties, our responsibilities, we execute. Thereafter, Allah Ta'ala will see us favorably, inshallah. But are we doing what we're supposed to be doing? So anyway, everything said and done. He's died en route. When he's died en route, so now the malaika that came to take away his soul, they had got a difference of opinion. The one malaika is saying, you have to take him to Jannah. Don't you see he committed 100 murders? And the other one is saying, no, but he was going to the Qaryatul Salihin, the village of the pious, I will take him to Jannah. Now they got a difference of opinion. Who? The malaika. So if the malaika, the choicest, purest creation of Allah Ta'ala, if they can have a difference of opinion, what's wrong if the ulama have a difference of opinion? Ask. Is there anything wrong? Malaika is the choicest creation of Allah Ta'ala. Is there anybody more choices than the malaika? They got a difference of opinion. One is saying, Jahannam kulle jaye. The other is saying, take him to Jannah. So, can't we just broaden our hearts, right? My heart tells me, he is more experienced, he's got more taqwa, I'll refer to him. Because after that, I don't listen to the whole world. Yes, I'm convinced that he's more learned, he's more experienced, and he's got the desired amount of taqwa, I'll hold on to him and move on. Now, another alim has got a contradictory view, I don't want to get stuck with him. I don't say, no, he's wrong, he's batil, and he's whatever else, I don't give him any titles. Yes, I hold on to this one here because I feel he's right and he's got the sufficient amount of experience and he's got the fear of the consciousness of Allah Ta'ala. He also could be right, but I don't understand the person, I don't know him, I don't know his experience, so I've got no disregard and disrespect for him. Yes, the one that I've got respect for, I will hold on to him. Why must we become sinful when we disrespected an alim or disregarded him or showed him any type of disregard? Why must we become sinful? He, between him and Allah Ta'ala, yes, what we know, we will hold on to that. What we don't know, that we excuse. So anyway, now the malaika having it out. He's saying, no, Jannah, he's in Jannah. So Allah Ta'ala sent a third malaika to arbitrate the whole case. You see, Allah's mercy and compassion, his love for his servant. Do you see that? Is there any bounds? Any limits? No limits. Yes, the heart must be right. No matter what you are, black, white, blue, yellow, whatever. Whatever your past was, but
Is your heart right? The heart was right. No matter whatever he's done in the past, but his heart was right. So Allah Pak said the third Farishta to judge, to preside over the whole case. Alright, he's come from here, and here he's moving to this point, right? Coming from here, this town, and he's moving to this point. So he says to the Malaik, alright, measure the point that he left to the point he died. And the point that he died to the town that he's going to. Right. If the point that he died to the town that he's going to is shorter, then bless him with Jannah. And if this point that he left to the point he died, that is shorter, then throw him to Jannah. In the meanwhile, Allah told another Farishta, you know what? Throw the land. This side you contract. And this side you expand. See that? But just do you see, you understand the mercy of Allah. That mercy of Allah strikes when you are truthful, when you are honest, when you exert yourself. You know, no ambiguity, you're not playing with Allah. You are truthful, you're acknowledging, you're coming straight. And then you don't have to make so many umrahs, so many nafil namaz. No. Be straight, be absolutely clean, be absolutely honest. I've done it, I'm wrong, I accept my mistake. Allah, I accept my mistake 100%, I'm guilty for this crime here, and I want to make amends. And see then how Allah will look at you. Imagine 100 murders he committed, how many people he made orphan, so many widows, so many homes, he's devastated, he has so many people in tears. But Allah's jaws of mercy is still wide open for you. He's making the system work. That this earth you contract, so you expand. Now the Malaika come to measure, and they found that the spot he died till the town that he has to reach is shorter. So get him to Jannah. You see that karne wali zaat kon, who is the one that makes everything happen? Just our intention is right, we are exerting our efforts, we are trying to follow right procedure. Allah, look at us favorably. Allah, look at us favorably.